Good morning. It's been an inspiration being with you all this far. I enjoyed the panel discussion. Some good wisdom there, some good humor. I think humor is part of wisdom. That may not sound real popular, but one man said that humor is a way of saying we're not okay, but that's okay. And I don't mean being single is not okay, but I mean just engaging the irony of human existence and the problems that we have and the difficult questions and choosing to chuckle about it instead of being vexed about it. And I was encouraged because I can tell that many of you are living this stage of life very well, and that blesses me. A few things that you should know before you listen to me too much. One is that I was single until I was 42. I'll be 45 in August, so you don't have to do the math. And I did not live at all very well. I struggled deeply with being alone. And I'm thankful that God allowed me to stay single until I got to a point where I learned to begin to embrace it and to enjoy it. And find purpose in it. I feel like my single years were very fruitful. God brought a lot of good things into my life and out of my life, along with my journey of growth. So it's a burden of mine and a legacy I hope to have left from my single years is that singleness is not a misfortune. It's not a bad thing. It's not a problem to be solved. It can be a very fruitful life. And I taught school for quite a few years. That was a very fruitful part of my life. I didn't have children, so I poured myself into the children that I did have. And some of them are well, actually, most of them, all of them were single when I was teaching school, but we don't usually think of it that way. Some of them are getting up into their 20s and their friends got married and they're still single. And it blesses me in different ways to see them choosing to embrace that and find meaning and fruitfulness. That's just a term that comes to my mind. We have some single brothers and a single sister at home, and that's a thing we often pray for them, is that God would help them to embrace this journey and be fruitful. It's not that married people don't have that same need. We'll get to that a little bit later. So this morning, my desire is not to preach a message at you or to you, but to preach a message for you. And there's probably many people that could get up and share things that maybe even some better things than what I'm going to share this morning. The text for this morning that was given me is 2 Timothy 2:21, and I'm going to back up to verse 20 just to get the whole context. 2 Timothy 2, verse 20. But in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. And this is the text verse. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. So the title is Meet for the Master's Use, and he talks about purging ourselves from certain things. It just says these. And you look at the passage and try to exercise some English grammar rules, it's not really clear what the antecedent is, what the these are. There's quite a few things in the passage that it talks about it could be referring to. And as I look to the early church fathers to see what the men who grew up being mentored by the apostles and their disciples in the time and the culture, what did they understand the connection to be? And there's a mixed bag there as well. So I'm going to take some liberty this morning to pick out of the mixed bag. One of the things it talks about is unsound words. And so this morning, thinking about preaching on this passage to a group of single people gathered together for the weekend, immediately what comes to my mind is the things that I've learned from my single years. So I want to talk about some words, or sometimes it's maybe words that we hear other people say, or things that we're tended to think, things that the devil and our minds in their without the guidance of God's Spirit, speak to us. That hinders us from being able to be fruitful. And I'm going to tell a lot of stories from my own life. What I'm sharing this morning isn't because I was a stellar example of this all my life, but because there are things that I've battled through a lot of hard things, and God was gracious in helping me to learn that. One thing that I'm thankful for in that is that I feel like I'm able to enjoy married life better because I am not afraid of going back and being single if something would happen. It's not something I'm trying to flee from. I know that I could do it. It would be adjustments, incredible adjustments, but it's doable, and I would still be able to find purpose and have a meaningful life, and most of all, be okay with God about what He was allowing. So, one quote that I heard some time ago, and I think is one of the most profound things about this whole discussion about single and married, is that we were all single once, and at least half of the population is going to be single again. I think that just kind of puts some perspective on the whole thing. Single again, because rarely do spouses die at the same time. So roughly half the married people will be single again when their spouse dies. So marriage is not a fix-all destination. Another thing to set context here is everyone's story is different, and that makes an incredible difference in how we approach this thing about being single. Some people have close family, have good church experience, they're in their home community. Some people are from very dysfunctional settings, whether it's church or whether it's family. And that background gives them a lot of things to work through. Some people have the gift of singleness. They don't have a strong urge to pursue a spouse. And others feel a deep sense of loneliness. It's a deep drive and desire that they've had and have to work with that. Some have never dated. Some have been through some very messy romantic endeavors and have that to work with. So, in looking across the face this morning, I have no idea what all your stories are. I know a few people here, some people from my long past, some from not so recent past, and some people that are in the same community with me now. But I don't know where you're coming from on it, so I hope that through this, whatever stage and whatever you're facing, the opportunities God has put in front of you now, that you can either be encouraged to keep it up, or there's something here that can help you do better than I did. Another thing is I don't find help in life when I'm feeling misfortunate or something like that. I don't find it helpful to try to make me feel better about my circumstances by throwing mud at the other thing. And that's a thing that happens a lot. People say, well, you know, if you get married, you know, your babies cry and keep you up at night. And of course, you don't have babies crying keeping up at night. So you must sleep wonderfully every night and you're just all refreshed. We've heard about that, about burnout. Any singles know about burnout? especially school teachers. there's other things as well. But I've seen a lot of people do that. Try to say, oh, well, you know, it's... And there is hard work in marriage. And marriage is not a fix-all, especially if it's not a good marriage. And there's the burden of children and, you know, wayward children. We don't have any children yet, but that's something that I look at as got to be incredibly difficult. But... I'm not going to sit here this morning and try to say marriage is just, you know, whatever. Single life is the life, you know. Travel the world. Change all your credit cards to air miles so you can fly for free, right? I tend to think that because God created the world as a man and a woman joining together, living together, and having a family, that is how humans, I want to say this very carefully, ideally, in an ideal world, that is probably the best experience for most people in a perfect world. The fact is, we don't live in a perfect world. And we're in the valley of sorrows. We're in a broken world where there's difficulties. And there are, all of us will at times, to different degrees, We will all have desires and needs that go unmet. And we have to learn how to cope with that. These things aren't God's fault, it's Satan's fault. It's because man in the beginning and each of us have joined the trend of choosing self-will. And like Romans chapter 6 says, to whom you yield yourself servants to obey, his servants you are. And in the beginning, Adam and Eve chose to obey Satan, and they sold the world to him. And the whole creation groans and travails with us because of that. It's not God's fault, it's a result of sin, that we have desires and needs even that are not met. So the goal of the message this morning is not to try to teach you how to hang on until you get married. That's not the point of life. And I'll hit that one with later points. So I'm not going to try to teach you how to hang on until you can get married. I'm not going to try to teach you how to become more marriageable. But I want to share some things I've learned that will hopefully help you or encourage you to continue finding fulfillment and fruitfulness now. To see this time in your life as an advantage and not a handicap. In this whole discussion, I think the struggles that single people face is primarily a minority issue. So, marriage has its peculiarities. It's that the things that that single people face is not the average experience of humans. Now, I hate being politically correct, but the term normal has the idea that if it's not normal, then there's something wrong with it. And I think that's problematic when we think about this. We say, well, it's not normal to be single. It's not the average human experience, but it is very normal for people to be single. For a certain time in their life, it's actually abnormal. Yeah, everybody's single, right? And there comes a point there where it becomes less and less of your friends are single, right? It's part of the thing. And so it becomes a minority issue. Most people don't think about it. The world tends to get built around and framed around, and people socialize around the commonness of the average. And so there's a lot of people who just don't understand. They don't know what it's like. They got married to their high school sweetheart when they were 20. And they just can't imagine anything different. That's an advantage of being single, is you get to live in both worlds. Even if you get married, you've lived in both worlds and you can understand better. As long as you don't do like too many married people and forget once you get married. So I think that's one of the things to keep in mind here, is it's not that there's something wrong or weird or something about it. It's just, it's not the average. So it is sort of a minority issue. It's a group of people that are experiencing something that a lot of people don't. Our culture over-glamorizes marriage and romance and those kinds of things. And I think that affects it some too, is that is the highest good. Maybe in a perfect world, there would be more truth to that. The sad part about love stories is often the ending makes it so bad that it overshadows what was good at the beginning. And I don't know, today I feel like we've lost something. That's probably, something's rubbed off on us to where even as Anabaptist people, we don't value singleness like what the early church did, what the scriptures did. That was brought up this morning. It's the things the Apostle Paul says about it. Without diving deep into it, the early church had an extremely high view of singleness. Now, I'm not talking about the guy who, works hard and then goes and blows all his money pursuing his, buying his hot rod and going elk hunting. I'm going to step on somebody's toes here soon. I'm not talking about living a frivolous, selfish life and avoiding marriage because of commitment and sacrifice. But people who committed themselves to embracing singleness and actually viewed it as a calling and lived their life that way and used their time and energy to dedicate to the church and to serving the poor and things like that. Had an extremely high view of it, to the point where several of them talk about, in order of rewards, the highest reward goes to the martyrs. And the second reward goes to the virgins, those who are single and celibate and serving God and the church with their time instead. So if you want something to encourage you, dig into that. There's some tools you can use to dig up topics like that. Anybody who uses AI, just ask it to look up in the Ante-Nicene Fathers what they had to say about singles, and you'll find some refreshing things. That may make a struggle for some of you, because maybe your home communities aren't that way. Everybody in your home community thinks that the most wonderful thing in the world is to get married when you're 20, 21, and have a whole string of children and be a mother or be a father and care for a family. And they just blink at you when no comprende. If that's the case, don't build up resentment. Don't go back home and try to change their minds. You probably won't. But fix that in your own mind and adjust that and realize that that's okay that they feel that way. They can't picture. They haven't been here. But the truth is that singleness is a time of agility and of focus, if you choose. There also are many lessons and character building experiences that happen. I think a person who's trying to live a single life well kind of is forced to learn that a lot of married people never do. I'll leave that. I'm not saying all, but a lot of them don't ever learn. Or have to learn in a much more difficult, I gotta be careful, there's some married people, old married people back there. But learn it in a much more difficult environment. So for example, contentment. You can get married when you're in your teens, early 20s, whatever, because you're chasing this mirage of, when I get married to Mr. Right or Mrs. Right, and we'll live happily ever after. And then you get there and you find out that you have to learn to be content, because same old is still same old, even if it was your sweetheart on your wedding day. It's a lot more difficult to work through that when you gotta live with that person all the time. It can force a lot of growth. That's one thing I noticed that when I got married, is I found out that when I had a bad day at work, I couldn't just come home and stare at the wall and kind of grump around in the evening and get over it. Right? It affected my wife. So there are some lessons I think that you can learn as a single and are forced to learn that I think some married people never do learn. Some of them, they do. When they do learn, it's a lot more painful. It's a lot more difficult because of the environment. There's so many people it affects, and you don't have the time and space to work it out in your mind. So I studied and tried to organize my thoughts a lot here, and I drove up here this morning, and I was not expecting I was not expecting there to be as many ladies here. I'm just gonna be blunt with you, as there is. So this feels just a little bit odd. I shouldn't say odd, but I'm just conscious of the fact that living single life as a female is different than it is from a male. And I've heard, my wife and I have talked about it. She was more of the adventuresome type that trotted the globe and spent a bunch of time overseas. She's a nurse, so she found a lot of opportunities there. I hope you can be blessed by what I'm sharing. So I put together tried to organize my thoughts in a few summarized concepts, unsound words that either we tend to think or that even we hear from other people, that if we can purge ourselves from these things, it will set us free to be able to be set apart and suitable for God to use us and to get a lot of mileage out of this time in life that we're in, whether that is going to continue the same for the rest of our lives, or whether it's for a few years. The first one is waiting room thinking. So the idea there is that singleness is a problem to be solved, not a state to be lived well. And I couldn't help but think of Dr. Seuss's Waiting Room in Oh, the Places You'll Go, and I don't know if any of you are Seuss fans, but you get so confused that you'll start into race down long, wiggled roads at a breaknecking pace and grind on for miles across weirdish, wild space, headed, I fear, toward a most useless place, the waiting place. For people just waiting, waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for the wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. I spent too much of my life like that. Probably those of you who knew me through the late 2000s, those of you that I was at Faith Mission with, probably would not have thought that about me. But underneath, I always had my hand on the door. I was waiting for this time to come. And there were some opportunities that I had, choices to make, that I feel like I chose well in the end. But it was a struggle because I was always playing that in. Well, what if I go do that? Then what if I miss? I'll talk about that later a little bit too. Probably I think a lot of the other struggles that we face fit in under this one, that we don't view it as a time in life, a life circumstance to be lived well. We view it as some sort of problem that needs to get fixed. And I think a lot of other people do. And to give them credit, some of the people I've heard the weirdest advice in my life from have been some of the people who were the closest to me, loved me the most, and I respect the most. If this was time for comedy, I could tell you some phone calls I've had that were just, I couldn't believe that guy just said that. He cared. He was well-meaning. He knew that I would like to have a family someday, and he was just trying to help, you know. So don't look down your nose. We're just enjoying a little of the irony of life this morning. But I think that a lot of the other problems fall under that. Singleness isn't a problem waiting for a solution. It's meant to be lived fully, faithfully, and fruitfully starting now. The hidden promise behind this lie is that if my circumstances would change, then I could this. Well, then I would become more like this. I would be more content. I'd just wake up with more joy in the morning, and just the birds would sing louder and the sun would be brighter, and it's not that way. You take yourself with you into whatever you go into, and whether you end up being married at some point in your life or not, you are living with the you that you're creating, and you are giving God the you that you're creating, whether you are learning to live in humility and in contentment and service and joy and trust and those kind of things. Another one is, if I had a sexual partner, I could overcome my lust. And I'm not going to say a lot about that, but that's not true. Self-control in a marriage and learning to control your mind and not to drink waters out of your own well rather than looking other places is an incredibly important thing to develop and at least get reins on while you're single. That can actually be a problem if you're used to always shopping when you're single. Someday you're going to have to stop that. I don't have all the tight answers for that, but this is a great place to open up and be discipled by others, share with them, and wrestle through these things. That's what a lot of this is. They're not, Evan said this morning about every complex question, there's a very simple answer, and often it's wrong. There often aren't simple answers, but they're things to be journeyed through, and through the journey, we learn and we change and we grow. Your circumstances won't produce virtue. Virtue is formed by our response to now, whatever that is. So instead of looking over the horizon, dreaming in the mirage, let's look at the time that we have in front of us and say, how can I follow Christ and trust Him and learn to become a godly person and make the most use out of this? Singleness is not a problem to be solved, but a state to be lived well. The second one is that being single is unfortunate. And these kind of sound similar, but one is step one and is the what, and the second one here is the why. So why do I view that singleness is a problem to be solved rather than a life circumstance to be lived well? It's because I feel like I'm unfortunate in the situation that I'm in. And at the bottom of that, I'm talking about myself. At the bottom of that is that I feel like God is withholding something from me that I need. Maybe that I deserve, but at least that I need. And that goes into a lot of really deep things about who God is and what is my relationship with Him. I spent a lot of time in this one. I went through several faith crises just with the entirety of life, coming from a very dysfunctional home and a bunch of church problems, and it didn't stop when I left home. And I felt many times like Elijah goes up in the chariot, leaves his mantle behind, and Elisha picks up the mantle and he goes to the Jordan River and he smacks the water and he says, "Where's the God of Elijah?" As I looked at things in my life, and you know, people talk about finding God's will. We're going to talk about that one a little bit later. I found God's will. I had dreams that came true almost spot on, and the whole thing ended up blowing up. Was God just playing games with me? So at its core, that's where we have to deal with, is who is God and God allowing this in my life. I think the core of it comes from this thing that we live in a fallen world, and so it's the fact is that things are going to happen. We are all going to have desires and even needs that are going to be unmet to some degree or another. It's a part of human experience. And what Satan has done from the beginning, he's so clever. He goes to Adam and Eve and he says, "Hey, you got to watch out for God, because he's pulling the wool over your eyes. You got to look out for yourself." So they did that, sold the world and themselves to Satan. Satan ruins everything, and now he goes around and says, "Look what God did." So he's trying to make us all think that all these problems that we experience in life is something God is doing to us. And frankly, we're going to get into this a little later, but a lot of the teaching out there that has, I hate to say, has leaked into our Mennonite churches, that God in His sovereignty determines what is going to happen, teaches that then God made this. God, before the world, He wrote out, well, so-and-so is going to have this happen, and then put the program in the player, and this is what came out of it. It's not true. That didn't even exist in Christian thinking until the time of Augustine in the 400s. But that's what Satan wants us to believe. And when we believe that, it separates us from the one who actually is going to redeem those things. So what we need to do is draw near to God and realize this isn't His fault. If we are in a place where this thing kind of things applies to people who come from a dysfunctional family, why was I born like this? People who suffer abuse, people who lose loved ones, these things aren't God's fault, but they are incredibly difficult, and we're left to work through. How do we handle this? And the answer is actually to draw near to God and allow Him to redeem that, because He will if we will choose to be called according to His purposes. See, we like to quote Romans chapter 8, verse 28, "All things work together for good to them that love God," right? And we stop. We keep reading. It says, "To them who are the called according to His purposes." Well, maybe we should think now what about His purposes are. We read the next verse, verse 30 says, I'm going to paraphrase the King James, "But God knew ahead of time who would choose Him, and He predestined them to be made according to the image of His Son." So that's God's goal, is for me to become like Christ and to be able to carry out Christ's work in this world. And Christ's work was to suffer and absorb the evil of the world and always return good. And so when we absorb the evil, the unfortunate, the challenging circumstances in our lives, and instead of becoming bitter and sour, becoming victims, the Bible doesn't use the word victim, it talks about bitterness and all those kinds of things. Instead of that, if we can return sweetness and blessing and allow Christ to dwell in us and do good through those things, then evil is actually put to an end. When someone suffers and evil comes into their life and they absorb that and they allow God to heal that and bring peace to their life and they can return good out of it, that evil is actually finally extinguished. And that's what we're called to, and that's God's purpose in our lives, is to invite us to become children under the hands of a good Father and follow Him so that we can join Christ in being willing to suffer. I'm not saying we have to go around going, because we're single. But whatever it is that in your life, to absorb that and to return sweetness and good. And when we do that, we have a part, a very real, literal part in crushing the head of the serpent with Christ. So whatever our circumstances in life, whatever it is in life that we're tended to chafe under, that's the answer, is that this is not an unfortunate thing in my life. This is an opportunity. I'll tell another little story here. So remember the story about the man who was born blind. And the disciples were walking past, they see him and they say to Jesus, so who was born blind, this man or his parents? First of all, there's some irony in there you got to notice. Who sinned so that he was born blind? How can you do a sin so that you're born blind? I don't know. But they asked him, who sinned, this man or his parents, that made him be born blind? And Jesus said, you're totally off on the wrong tangent. This happened so that you would have an opportunity to see the glory of God. And in our lives, whatever it is that is unsavory, that we wish was different, it's not necessarily because we've done something wrong or somebody else, but it's because we live in a fallen world, and it's an opportunity for us to show God's glory. When someone receives something that is unpleasant, that's evil, that's difficult, and returns sweetness. The third one is that God's will is a code I must decipher. So, like I said a minute ago, our circles have been infiltrated with some of this thinking that God plans out each detail in our lives. Now, I know that sounds, what I'm about to say sounds like the complete opposite of Psalm 139, because Psalm 139 says that you knew about all this. But it doesn't say that God made it happen. He knew about it. And we know from other scriptures that there's good to come out of that. But God knew who your parents were going to be. He knew what your DNA was going to be made up of. But He didn't necessarily make that happen. God created free will and human choices. Just because He knows what's going to happen doesn't mean He's making it all happen. One example of this is, just because you're in a helicopter watching a parade doesn't mean, just because you know what's coming next, the people on the ground, they can only see what's here in the middle, doesn't mean you're making it all happen. It just means you know. And then you're free to interact with it. Because you're watching a live stream of your friend's wedding doesn't mean that you're making it all happen. You know that what's happening there, even though you're not there. And you can interact with it. You can send your barbershop quartet buddies in there to crash it with a goofy song. You can send food or send flowers or, you know, whatever. You can interact with it. God, so one thing of the things I struggled with is, what if I'm supposed to somehow lay this down and I'm just supposed to be single for the rest of my life? How do I know? And maybe I'm sitting here continuing to hope and continuing to try, and I'm just beating my head on the wall, and God wants me to be single. And God's will doesn't work that way. God's will works. So in Scripture, when we look at Scripture and we read about God's will, it's never God's will that I should wear this certain color of clothes today, or that someone should go work at a certain place. God's will is for us to be our sanctification. It's God's will that all should be saved. It's God's will that we should be humble. It's God's will that we, God's not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. God's will is for us to follow him as dear children and live from a heart and a life that's according to his will in our character and in our values, our virtues. And then out of that, God knows what's going to happen. And then he does interact with us and he does bring people together, but it's because we choose. That was really freeing to me when I realized that God is not, there's not some, the other one is that there's a certain person you're supposed to find. And that's where then people are like, oh, I'm supposed to get this sign. Like, which one does God want me to pick? So I'm waiting for a dream or for, you know, us to meet on the road or whatever. Her to happen to look at me during the hymn singing or like all this kind of stuff. And that's not true. That may be a sign that she likes you. It may not. It may, we'll stop there. My point in it is that God's will is for us to take the pen and write the script for our lives. And God will work with us. He'll correct us. He'll bring us into things that to try to turn us around. But God will let us go the way we choose. And when we sit down and we're faced with two decisions, somebody mentioned that this morning in the panel discussion, and I hit this when I was getting ready to leave Faith Mission. I had two things plopped in front of me, two offers for, well, volunteer service. One was teaching school and one was something overseas. And I'm like, oh no, which one am I supposed to take? Because what if I go down this one and then I miss, you know, X, Y, Z? Through that, I realized I was not in a position to go overseas, so I took the position of teaching, and through that unfolded, I don't know how to tell you the things that I learned and the good God did in my life through that. But I think what God wanted me to do is not fear and just get some advice and just operate off of a clean heart. Now, if I'm choosing to go over to the Middle East because then I can come back and with a good tan and tell stories about, you know, busting through roadblocks with machine gun bullets flying through the windshield. Okay, that's not God's will for me to make decisions based on that kind of stuff. I hope you get what I'm saying. If you have questions about it, please ask me. God's will is not a code I have to decipher. It's something that God knows what I'm going to choose. And as I choose out of a pure heart, God works together with that to bring good in my life. And that's my journey, or that's my testimony about my journey through life so far, is God has blessed my feeble efforts to try to honor him. Where I haven't, he's gently corrected me and brought me back. And God has brought incredible good in my life and guided me to connections with people and opportunities that are far more than anything I could have hoped for as a teenager. God's will is for me to live as a child trusting him and growing in his likeness, becoming him to the world around me. That's the truth about it. Something is wrong with me. This is another one that we're tended to believe. So I'm not married. Nobody's asked me, or it hasn't worked out when I have dated. And for those of you who don't feel that drive and haven't pursued it, you're spared many things, and God bless you, and I just say fire away. Yeah. This is out of place, but I'm just going to tell this one. So I felt a little bit sometimes like I was leaving the Navy SEALs or something when I got married. Because before I could talk about these things, and I have a friend right now that his wife left him. It's horrible. And he's going through divorce and all this kind of stuff. The fact is if he's a professing Christian, if he's going to follow Jesus, he needs to remain single for the rest of his life. That's a huge cross. See, I can tell him that. He's like, yeah, that's nice for you to say, but you go home to your wife.
But see, at home, I have another brother. His name is Jason, and he's the same age I am. And he is living single because of an improper marriage that fell apart. And when Jason looks at that brother and says, yeah, this is what Christ wants, is for you to remain single and dedicate your life to him and be a model of his commitment to his people and always leaving the door open for reconciliation. He can't say anything because Jason's doing it. He has a tremendous opportunity. When you discuss with men about purity and things like that, if you're living in purity yourself, I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but if you're living a life of self-control and that stuff yourself, you have tremendous witness they can't argue with.
All right, back to something's wrong with me. This is just a bad question. Don't go there. One of the reasons why is because it's the mistake of Job's three friends. So Job's friends came and they said, if you were being righteous, things would go good for you. But because you're having all this problem, God's punishing you for something. Or God's trying to tell you that there's something in your life that you're not willing to, you got to open up about this, Job. Confess your sins. And God, at the end, God got hard on them. He said, you guys better get Job to pray for you because I'm not even going to listen to you. Because they spoke evil about God. This goes back to what we were talking about before, God being a redeemer. That saying that because there's bad things happening to you means God is angry with you or God, there's something wrong with you. It's a bad way to make decisions about our lives. Well, because this didn't work out, that must mean there's something wrong with me. So the way we know if something's wrong with us is we go to the Sermon on the Mount and we go to different places in the epistles and we look at what it says Christian character should be like. And we look in the mirror, like James says, and we go our way and we do something about what we see. Another huge part of this is being a Christian isn't a solo thing. This is something we do together in community. And I would encourage you, if you struggle with that, go to your mentors, some people who are at least your peers or more mature than you, and open your life to them and invite them to tell you, talk to you about things that there might be in your life that you should grow in, whether you want to get married or not. That shouldn't be the goal that I tailor my character around. It's just a bad thing, but boy, it ate me up. And one girl told me no, and I think she was just trying to be nice, but she said two things. It's because you're too this and you're too that, and boy, that stuck. I was told that all my life, you're to this, you're to that, you're to the next thing. And boy, the devil just chalked that right up and he just reminded me about it all the time. And it was just discouragement and just fight that. Singleness is not a diagnosis. It's not, doesn't tell you what's wrong with you or it's not an indicator of who you are and what's an evaluation of your life. It's an opportunity that God has allowed in your life because he has good, incredible good to bring through this if we will follow him. The passage about that sums up in my own mind as I think about this thing about dealing with hard, difficult things in our life experience, whatever it is in 1 Peter there where it says, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him. He cares for you. And that's the way to handle it. We don't just bottle it and stuff it and just say, oh, I'm fine. I don't need guys in my life anyways. I don't need a woman in my life. I can, I like eating hot dogs. Don't do that either. But talk to God about the difficulties, the challenges that you face, the times when you feel misunderstood or left out, and let him carry that for you. And trust him, open your life to him, and let him bring good through it. That leads me on to another one. Nobody understands me. This is a snare I think we can get into, whether you're single and would like to be married sometime, or whether you're fine, is so you're around all of the ladies, and they're all talking about
they're babies.
And you sit there and it's like, what do I talk about? And this is an opportunity. Anytime someone's in a challenging position, Satan wants to step in and say, yeah. He wants to turn you into a victim and say, yeah, you know, nobody understands you. You know, poor you. Like, how in the world are you supposed to be part of a church and like when people treat you like this? And he wants to create a selfish mentality that turns you into a victim and makes you withdraw. This is where what starts happening is then we pull back from our brothers and sisters in Christ because of a grudge, because we feel like they don't care about us. We read evil into their intentions. We read evil intentions into them, and then we pull back from them. And there's whole lists in Scripture that talk about that kind of stuff, strife and seditions and evil speaking. And it's right along with murder and extortion and witchcraft. We need to really take those things really seriously and watch. When we see those roots pop up, it doesn't matter how much logic is behind it. And let me tell you, Satan is good at logic. We know the tree by its fruit. And when you see those roots, when it starts making you feel pull back from people, I know this is not from God. However much it claims to be my friend and trying to take care of me, this is not from God. I'm not going to listen to it. And then step into those relationships. And the solution to loneliness is to reach out to others. So reach out and try to learn about what's going on in their life. Stop, see if you can help them with their shelling their peas. Whatever. Reach out and look for ways that you can step into their lives and bless them. One way to do this is, I think, is incredible is with children. This is for guys, for men and women. If you wish for a family, if you wish for children of your own, bless the ones that are in your life. Pour yourself into them. That was an incredible blessing to me. When I taught school and even afterwards, our church, I taught Sunday school and I did stuff with them that nobody else did, nobody else will, because nobody else has the time to go take them on a field trip every month and things like that. But I did, and I don't now. It was a thing for a time. It was a blessing that God gave me. I can't tell you how many times through some really difficult stuff that I went through when I was teaching school that I would just thank God with tears for my students, because it gave me somebody to pour my life into and distract me from my own stuff that was going on. I'm going to skip one and just go to the last one. The last one kind of builds on that. And that is that unless I'm married, my basic human needs cannot be met. My need for companionship, for love, for belonging. I still think that God created men to need women and women to need men. In the church, as a single, when I worked at Faith Mission, the Committee for Soul to the Cross, teaching school, like it was incredibly valuable to have women on the committee to balance it out, to bring their feminine side of sensibilities, the things that they pay attention to and catch on to and think about. Even just friendship and laughter and things like that. There's a wholeness that comes from that. And it's when we let go of what we wish we could have and we accept what is, then we find things to be thankful for. And thank God for the ladies in your life that do invite you over for a meal. And you can sit and talk to her and her husband and enjoy some family life. Thank God for that's just a big one to me, for the children in your life, the young people in your life, to give value to them, to step up and show them that they care, to broaden their foundation of stability from just their parents and their family, but to other people in the church that they can look up to and they can sense love and care and stability from. Many of you are involved then in mission and service endeavors overseas and things like that. But give thanks for what you do have instead of pouting. I didn't do it in public very much, but at home, for what you don't have. Because the fact is, when I did that, I was the one who had to live with that
mental space and that character and that outlook in my life. And I was actually hurting myself the worst. And when I learned, I can't kick myself too hard because it was, God was kind and patient with me and worked with me. It was a journey. But learning to do that just brought so much freedom to me. When we look at the Beatitudes, Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, and those who mourn, and those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, and the peacemakers, and those who are persecuted and spoken against. He doesn't say, oh, I'm sorry, you guys. It's tough. Now, I'm not saying God doesn't care and sympathize with us when we're going through those things. But his viewpoint of it is not, oh, you're disadvantaged. This is a problem to be solved to get you out of this. He's saying, you have an incredible opportunity. You are to be envied. You're blessed because yours is the kingdom of heaven. You are having an opportunity to make heaven come back to earth by your response to this. In closing, so back to the text, it says, if any man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. This word sanctified, I want to think about a little bit before we wrap up. And it's not a word we used a lot, and there's, as a teacher, I have a passion for explaining things, but not getting rid of the word. So, but there's these words like this, especially these theology words. They're kind of like this blob. It's kind of like a thing that you know it's there and it's good. It's something you're supposed, but you don't have a clue what's inside. And this is, can be one of them. I like to think about sanctification. This is something you ladies are very familiar with. When you have company, you sanctify the room, right? You say, this is for this purpose, and then you do things to it and treat it in a way that makes it as best equipped for that purpose as it can be. Guys, we do it in other ways. Sometimes it might be your favorite tool, and you say, this is my good XYZ. Don't anybody use that. And you oil it, and you keep it in a safe place, and or maybe it's a piece of materials for some project, and you get it all together, and you set it aside, and you make sure it's dry and taken care of, because this is for this project I'm going to work on. That's a simple way for me to think about sanctification in my life, is I decide this is for this purpose. It's set apart, and then I do things to it myself, my life, and I treat it in a way that makes it equipped, ideally suited for that purpose. And in this case, it is to be something that God can use. And back to Romans 8:28, one of the problems that I realized on different levels through my life and other things besides being single, one of the problems I had is that, so all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purposes. My problem was I had my own purposes for life. I wanted to just get away from the background I grew up from and just be a normal person. And God had allowed other things to happen, and that wasn't a healthy response, and so God had other purposes that he wanted to work in my life. And God would have let me go that route, and I would have been very miserable, but God kept bringing things into my life to help me to work through that and begin to accept the things that he had allowed in my life and to use them for his glory. It's an ongoing journey. I hope that some of the things I've shared this morning can connect with you, or at least be an encouragement to you. I'm convinced that some of you are living your single life much better than I ever did. And if it's something that there are things you're struggling with, welcome to the journey. You're not abnormal. It's normal to struggle with those things. But there is hope for it. And I hope that's my hope in sharing, is that if something can either encourage you or maybe help somebody get ahead of the game a little bit quicker than I did. And I think that if we can get rid of the waiting room thinking and embrace the present as the best time to learn and to grow and to become whatever we want to be, if we can stop thinking being single is unfortunate, and that God will give me everything that I need to be someone who suffers cheerfully and always returns blessing and good and life into the world. If I stop believing that God has this thing mapped out and is strategically hidden, and I have to somehow figure out what's God's will for my life. And I start focusing on simply becoming the person that he tells me he wants to be, following the clear things I know. Oh, this is, yeah, that's God's will. It says right there, this is the will of God concerning you. If I stop allowing myself to be pushed away from others because I think they don't understand me, and I choose to enter into those relationships with love and choose to give to the other person, if I choose to, instead of thinking that my basic human needs are unmet, and rather give thanks for the opportunities that I do have, the things that God does give me in my life, I think that if we can do those things, that we'll be well on the way to being sanctified and meet for the Master to use us. Singleness is not a misfortune. If we let God work through it, it can be an incredibly fruitful life. God bless each one of you.